The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events. Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. David, it's good to have you back. I know you've been on the road to Dallas. You've gone to Chicago, L.A. Well, David, I know you love going to these conferences because you get a chance to have one-on-one time with our clients, people who have actual questions that they've been waiting to ask, and you can sit over the table, have one-on-one meetings with them. I wish there was a way that we could duplicate that, and I know you're working towards that now.
Well, Kevin, we have people traveling from many states, some of them flying in for the events, and many of them taking trains and driving hundreds, even thousands of miles to be there. So we're honored to have them there and to be able to interact with them personally. That's fantastic. That's one of the most valuable times for us during the year, is that one-on-one time with clients. What we would say is that the conversations, incredibly intriguing. The questions, very intelligent. And we just wish that all of our clients had been there for these four events in the last several weeks. So with that in mind, Wednesday night, this week, Wednesday night, we're doing a conference call, which anyone and everyone is invited to. You can listen in. It's 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have details for you. You can call our office at 800-525-9556. So repeat that again, 800-525-9556. And anyone in the office can give you the details how to be registered for that conference call. We look forward to fielding your questions. We'll have several minutes of commentary in front of it and then go right into your questions live from the audience.
Well, and I should say, David, it's a great chance to talk to you. But for those listeners who are listening to this maybe after the conference call occurred, you'll be doing this again, so they just need to stay tuned. And we do need to get people's email addresses so that we can let them know when these things are happening.
It's become very important that as fast as the world is changing, we need to be able to communicate on an instantaneous basis. And theoretically, we can do that, but we have to have the means by which to do that, and that is delivering it directly to you as quickly as possible. So if we don't have an email address, certainly get that over to us, and we'll make sure that you're included in whatever communiques that you'd like. Certainly you can filter what you want and what you don't want from our organization.
It's been a big week because every year, one of the things that you've been committed to is producing a video or a film that tries to encapsulate what's going on and what we see on the horizon. And just last Friday, the latest one, The Fuse is Lit, came out. We've got it available on the internet. So for a person who, maybe they participate in the conference call, maybe they listen to the weekly commentary, but we want them to also see. It's a 22-minute segment, so it's easy to watch. I mean, time-wise, it doesn't take much of a commitment.
Well, and what we chose to do this year is instead of doing one 60-minute DVD, we split it into these three segments so that we could, in a timely fashion, deal with particular issues as we thought they would be more appropriately dealt with. So this first one, the subtitle is European Perils. The second one, which will be released late summer, is Asian Ascendance. And the third is An American Reckoning, which will be out at the end of the year. And the key to this, actually, Kevin, is to get this to people in a timely fashion. We have to have a workable email address. We cannot send it out hard copy. We're not going to be sending it out hard copy. So to view it, you can view it online. It's very easy to send to friends and family members and colleagues. It's sort of one click away from sending it to as many people as you think should view this very important, very timely information. With all the things that are happening in Europe, even as we speak, I think this will bring a lot of clarity as to what the issues are, what potential solutions are, and what individual investors should be considering right now.
Well, and you know, we can get your email address if you just email us at McIlvaney@McIlvaney.com. That's spelled McIlvaney.com. And so it's easy. McIlvaney@McIlvaney.com. The other thing our listeners can do, if you go to YouTube, basically you can just go to YouTube/McIlvaney Financial, and it'll take you to the channel. I'm talking to the listeners now of this program. It'll take you to the channel, and you can watch not only this video segment, but some of the others that we've put together in the past.
Lots of ways to find us. You can go to McIlvaney.com, as you mentioned. You can go to YouTube/McIlvaney Financial. We're all over the place, and I think that if you take the time in 5-minute segments or for the full 22-minute segment, you'll find it a very good use of time to look through it and then send it on to friends.
Well, David, I'm going to bring us a little closer to home right now because the stock market has really done something pretty historic. It has lost ground 12 out of the last 13 days. Now, I'm not sure exactly where we're at now, but I think there's only been 3 or 4 times in history that the stock market has come close close to that. So,
well, the last time was 1974.
Oh, you're kidding. Okay, yeah. So what's going to happen next? Is it just going to continue, or do we have a rally in the wind?
I think looking at the seasonality is important, and Alan Newman, who puts together Cross Currents, a great publication, pointed this out several weeks ago. $10,000 invested in sort of the hot season, if you will, and that's sort of November through April, would have netted you over a 50-year period roughly $650,000, or about a 14% annualized gain. That same $10,000, if you invested it only in what he describes as the dead zone, that is between May and October.
And, of course, you're talking about the stock market here.
Yes, of course. This is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. This dead zone, again, we're in it right now, that period from May to October, your $10,000 over a 50-year period would be about $9,000.
So
the difference between losing a grand over a 50-year period versus moving from $10,000 to $650,000 is very significant. So don't ignore seasonality. And are we in a seasonally weak period? Now, having said that, it's important to note that we have seen these 12 out of 13 sessions that have been down. Yesterday was some reprieve. We've got some reprieve today as well. And this is wonderful. We will and should see something of a throwback rally in equities. But our view is that there's very little volume holding this market together. Very high insider selling. And we've seen that for the last 6 months consistently. And what we're setting ourselves up for is potentially catastrophic moves in the stock market circa late summer and early fall. So would be very concerned. And this dead zone period, as Newman describes it, is likely to become very, very dangerous as we progress. And any rally we see in here, investors should take very seriously and be reorganizing the risk that they have in their portfolios.
Well, David, speaking of seasonality, okay, we've heard about Warren Buffett. In fact, he's almost been put on a pedestal where everybody goes, oh, the Buffett way. You know, there are books called The Buffett Way.
Oracle of Omaha.
That's exactly. You can build an entire library of books about or written by Buffett. But here's the thing, and this is not to take anything away from his amazing ability to buy value, but there are some blind spots. You know, you were talking about the seasonality, turning 10 grand into 600 or turning 10 grand into 9. I guess it just depends on timing. And sometimes paper guys can get awfully cocky and mock the gold guys.
Well,
now, you talked about the Dow gold ratio.
That's the point. Buffett's right-hand man, Charlie Munger, makes a comment recently that no civilized person would buy gold. He says only a person sewing the stuff into a garment hem and being chased by Nazis would do such a thing. So, you know, not exactly what we would consider an appropriate comment.
Mm.
But, you know, civilized people, in his opinion, buy operating companies, period, full stop. So they defined what a civilized person is, and we ask Mr. Buffett and Mr. Munger exactly how it feels in this environment to have lost 75% of their purchasing power relative to gold over the last 11 years.
Okay, so like the Dow gold ratio, which we take how many shares of the Dow an ounce of gold will buy or vice versa, what you're basically doing is you're taking Berkshire Hathaway, which is,
let's just call it Buffett.
Okay,
we're taking Buffett and dividing by the spot price.
Over the last 11 years. And he's lost 75% of his purchasing power to an uncivilized investment.
Right. Buffett would have bought 275 ounces of gold 11 years ago, and now Buffett only buys 67 ounces of gold. This is
so
just
what you're saying
ago.
Is a share of Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's how much it's
fallen.
It
bought 275 ounces of the yellow metal, but today it buys far less. Buy 70 to 75% less.
Right.
And well, our suggestion would be wait to see what the ratio goes to when Berkshire A shares trade for 25% lower in lockstep with the general equities market.
Well, and David, this is something that may be new for people who are new to listening, but we have looked at the Dow gold ratio for decades because we've seen over and over and over the Dow rise to many multiples of the price of gold. You know, back in the 20s, it was 20 times the price of gold, and then it came down. And then in the 60s, it got to be 30 times the price of gold, and then it came down. And then it got to be 40 times the price of gold in the year 2000. But each time it came down, David, it got to just pretty close to 1 ounce of gold.
1 ounce, 2 ounce, 3 ounces. And what we're basically saying is rather than looking at the Dow, let's look at one of the genius investors of our age,
right,
and see how well he's doing stacked up against something that's so uncivilized. Again, 70 to 75%. Let's go back to that point, Kevin, because if we should see a 25% slip in the general equities market,
right,
Berkshire will go with the stock market. And we assume gold will trade at roughly $1,950. That's $1,950 on or near that day. And at a ratio, again, Buffett to gold ratio of about 46 to 1. That's about an 83% loss in purchasing power. Wouldn't surprise us there's a high likelihood that the Oracle of Omaha will have ultimately given up 90% of its purchasing power by the time the gold pull market begins to tire out.
Well, Dave, if they've lost 83% of their value or are about to, we're going to have to see what new definition these men give to civilized. I mean, to accommodate their heightened level of frustration.
Well, I hope they don't think it's uncivilized for us to buy a few of their operating companies from them when that time comes.
So you might even buy Buffett at a bargain. That's what you're saying?
And when he goes on sale, sure.
Okay, well, all right. Now, going back to the DVD, because the DVD not only covers what's going on in Europe, but it covers some of the things we're talking about. You know, the debt and the dollar are primary themes in this year's DVD, because it's not really just equity prices that we're concerned about at this point. It's the loss of the reserve currency value of the dollar worldwide, is it not?
Well, exactly. What we've done is we've basically said these are the two primary concerns for U.S. investors today, the debt markets and the dollar market, what we denominate all of our assets in. And then we've looked at the three primary inputs to impact the debt and the dollar. One, European machinations. Number two, changes in Asia and the way that they view the dollar trade relationships.
That's the second segment,
that's
right?
The second
We're going to look at Asia at that time.
And then finally, the policy measures and the politicians who are in place implementing them following the election. So these things will bear heavy on the markets. Our view is, if you, the listener, will get this in as many hands as possible, you may be keeping tears from rolling down your shoulder as friends and family members and colleagues deal with a very difficult 12 to 24 month period as it relates to their finances, the political structure that we live in, the social environment that we're a part of, in essence, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And we feel that this is a vital period of time where when you're looking at friends, family members, and colleagues, there has to be a rally point, and you must convey to them the seriousness of the circumstances that we're in. A period of time over the next 24 to 36 months we have never seen in U.S. history. There's a lot at stake, including dollar reserve currency status, and that's one of the things that features prominently in the first and second segments of this DVD series. Again, it's available. It was released on Friday, and we just have to have an email address to deliver it to you.
Well, you know, David, speaking of this next segment, Japan was just downgraded by Fitch this week, okay? So we're seeing downgrades in areas that we haven't seen before.
Just anecdotally, Kevin, there's stories coming out of 10 and 12-year-olds, and these are males, being delivered to orphanages throughout China. And understand what that implies in terms of how severe a correction China is already in the midst of. But males are prized over females in this culture, okay? Mm. The one-child policy made it something that families had to decide very clearly, where is the growth in our family going to be? Where is the support in our old age going to come from? What advantages do we have? And they have favored having sons versus daughters. The fact that there are now an explosion of 10 and 12-year-old boys being delivered to orphanages, I think is telling, Kevin, in terms of families even being able to support that which they prize the most from a cultural or a familial standpoint.
Well, and what's amazing about the Chinese situation is not only are they not growing at the speed that they were before, but the United States is so darn dependent on China buying our treasury bills. You know, I know this just over the last couple of days, there's been a decision to allow China to bypass Wall Street to buy treasury bills. Okay, now, what pressure did China put on America so that they basically are bypassing Wall Street, going directly for treasuries? We're desperate for them to continue to buy and hold our debt, David.
Very important in the last several days has been the Chinese politicians stepping out and saying, we will support growth in our economy. And what I'd like to say, Kevin, is when you have to declare that you will support growth, what that means is that behind the scenes, there is something to support. It needs the support of government. It now needs the direct intervention of government. Kevin, what we were talking about in recent days is that it is, frankly, easier for a communist to think in Keynesian terms,
right,
than a communist to think in capitalist terms. And the solutions that we're likely to see implemented in China to fix the slowing growth problem that they have today and maintain themselves on sort of a self-sufficiency trajectory will be of a Keynesian nature, and they will call it capitalism, but that's because we have confused over the last 100 years exactly what capitalism is for something that is more Keynesian, socialist, even Marxist, and consistent with communism in nature.
Well, then let's go ahead and do a definition of terms, because when we're talking about Keynesian, we're talking about government intervention and basically spending and taxation, but we're also talking about monetization of their own debt, all right, and so, or printing of money. So what we're seeing right now in China, in fact, over the last few days, they've come out and said that they're going to subsidize a number of purchases as long as they're energy efficient. Now, that sounds to me like what we do here in the Keynesian sense. We're just going to pump government money into this because we see that it's slowing too quickly.
Well, and this harkens back to two conversations we've had in recent weeks, John Taylor and Richard Duncan, because in the Taylor interview, you know, what we see is an acceptance of new models and statistical methods as an undergirding for economics as it's practiced.
Right.
And there's a lot that's assumed. There's a lot that is assumed to be reliable. And this is what we have in the U.S., and it's certainly what we're seeing adopted elsewhere. In past conversations, we've talked about command economies and those economies having characteristics of capitalism.
Right.
But to be more precise, it's not that they have characteristics of capitalism, is that they have characteristics of some sort of fascist capitalism melded with Keynesian ideas. And I know that's perhaps mind-blowing in terms of the concepts being tied together, but where you have the state directing success, where you have the state choosing winners and losers, in China where you've got the state-owned enterprises deciding how and when assets are going to be deployed from the public coffer, this again is, going back to Taylor's interview just last week, interventionist and not market dynamic, truly.
Well, and you know what was interesting about listening to Taylor as you guys were talking? He's really got a pretty good model if you're using a Federal Reserve system as to how you set interest rates. But the problem is you have to still ask, what are the first order and second order questions being used before you even use the model? Now, the inflation rate.
Well,
you guys
just
had a discussion about inflation, and he actually had to admit that inflation probably was higher than what was being reported.
But he wasn't really willing to go down that road and say just how high it was.
Because I think it was because it scared him to death.
Well, so for the sake of argument, he will have to default to the current, again, this goes back to general accepted model and statistical method that's being used by the BLS to what is more or less constituted as BS, the current CPI, that is Consumer Price Index, our inflation number.
Okay, well, David, I'll tell you, as controversial as Richard Duncan is, and he writes a fabulous book, but I don't know that I necessarily agree with his solutions. What was something that you walked away from the interview that you felt was adding to the conversation of what we've been having over the last 5 years?
Very simply, that we have not had capitalism for 100 years.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, so we assume that we're seeing some sort of a degradation, or that the Occupy Wall Street folks are appropriately responding to the too big to fails. Listen, we've had too big to fails for a long time. Remember that Goldman Sachs was on the ropes in the 80s, and it was a combined effort by Mitsui and our U.S. government that bailed them out. This is more or less a state of affairs which has been in place for a long, long time, decades, if not the entire century, and I think that's a keen observation. What is probably less valued by us in terms of the conclusions of the book, which you just alluded to, is that there is a solution. More of the same will simply be a solution, and I think Duncan, frankly, doesn't believe that there's any solution at all.
You could hear that in his voice.
And
he was saying, if the government's already completely in control and they're going to spend money anyway, let's at least have them spend it on something that may get us out of the situation. But he didn't believe that.
Well, and he does believe that in the sense that there's no other course.
Right.
What he's assuming is that we are so far gone that the only question is whether or not we are dead 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or tomorrow. And so that's all he's playing for is time, because he's assuming it's already game over.
Okay.
Game over. Match called.
If he is right, and I think he's right at least on the fact that the government already is spending too much money and can never pay their debt off, okay, which means they're going to print. Let's look at the thing that actually reacts to that problem, which is gold. Okay, now David, gold over the last 6 months has been falling in value. In fact, we got down into the low 1500s, I think. What was it, 1532?
1532 was the low in European trade. We hit it overnight last week between Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. And the likelihood of that being the lowest levels for several years is good. I'd say 80-20.
Okay.
80% that those are the lows that we see and don't revisit for as many as 5 or 10 years, if not more. We're still consolidating, but it appears that a floor is in place at those December lows. Silver above 27, gold above 1532. Now we'd like to see a confirmation of the prices stabilizing at a slightly higher level. Gold above that 1600, and even more important for us, 1630.
Right.
And silver between 29 and 31. But again, I'd say there's an 80% chance that the recent lows hold and are not seen again, as in not seen again.
Ever. Well, and the thing is, David, if you go back and look, and we've talked about this on numerous occasions, we've sent emails to our clients, if you go back and look at the 65-week moving average chart and just take the last 65 weeks and look at how gold's price on average has risen over the last 11 years. The angle really hasn't changed. Even though we see these spikes up on gold and then it comes back down, it'll hit the 65-week moving average chart and then drop a little bit below it, which is, it's where we're at right now. But, you know, when you were in Dallas, okay, I know you were talking to a gentleman who basically said, David, you gave me an opportunity when we were talking about this just a few years ago to buy gold in the three-digit area, and now I've lost that.
Well, what I told him was that this would be the last opportunity in his lifetime to buy gold in three digits, and that left a lasting impression, in part because it's played out just so.
Right.
We now have four digits, and I'm not suggesting that you have to buy now because it's four digits and it's never going to be four digits again. Because frankly, I look at the inflation-adjusted price of gold at somewhere between 26 and 2800 and see that we are in the midst of a generational repricing, from the 400s.
Right.
To ultimately the inflation-adjusted price. Now, getting to the inflation-adjusted price, I think we will go far beyond the inflation-adjusted price, far beyond that 26 to 2800 level.
So that's what you're thinking, inflation-adjusted. If everything were to stabilize and we said, okay, what's the average for the next 20 years? Your thinking is it's going to be in the 25 to 27, 2800 range.
26 to 2800 is a range, and my assumption is that off of a major spike higher, ultimately that's the plateau where we settle back into, and that's something that our children and grandchildren come to appreciate as a fairly boring asset class. Never really does much out of a $24,000 to $3,000 price band as it bounces around in and above or slightly below its inflation-adjusted price. That is the process that we're in. It's a process very similar to the 1970s, where the inflation-adjusted price back then was roughly $400, and between 74 and 76, we flirted with getting to those levels, and by 79, we had gotten to those levels and still doubled to 875 in a matter of 6 weeks.
Which
guess
was too
where
much.
We ultimately settled back into
the 400.
It was the 400 level, the inflation adjusted level.
So David, even though you've talked about gold getting up to $4,000-$5,000 an ounce, it's possible that if the dollar weren't to completely fail and it go to millions of dollars an ounce, we would see gold possibly blast $4,000-$5,000, something in that range, and then come back down to a stabilized level for a period of a decade.
Well, I think that's a worst-case scenario. The best-case scenario is that gold is to some degree monetized, remonetized, and you've got the Swiss talking about it right now. The largest Swiss political party is discussing having a Swiss gold franc and having it run parallel to a more easily traded paper currency, but where everyone understands that there is something backing it. Ultimately, I think you're looking at the Chinese building up gold reserves so that they can compete with Europe and compete with America, being one of three of the world's reserve currencies, plural instead of singular, focused on the U.S. dollar. Gold should play, and I think is likely to play, a permanent role in the world monetary system. The issue is, at what level will it be remonetized? And I think it only makes sense at a much higher level, because otherwise it represents a half a percent, it represents 2%, it represents 5% of the total stock of currencies that are in float at a given time. So, no, it has to be at a higher level, and that makes that 26 to 2800 level probably the conservative downside estimate as we get through a bull market, into a bear market. That's probably your downside. Do I like 1500, 1600 as a price today? Yes, and that's why I would say next year this time, I think we'll look back at 1600 and consider it an inexpensive price.
Well, and I think, David, we need to reaffirm for people that we're just trying to survive this devaluation of the dollar until they do remonetize gold. I mean, it seems like it's a logical, natural conclusion that if you've got a failing currency and you have the ability to go back and somehow stabilize it, maybe in this case, like Barry Eichengreen said, it's going to be a mixed bag. It's going to be multiple currencies all backed with some sort of gold or in a basket with some gold.
Or like Giulio Garrotti suggested, perhaps not gold, but something that replicates gold in terms of the disciplines that are needed for a stable monetary system. And one of the things that we're going to learn to appreciate over the next 24 to 36 months is the extreme disunion and infighting amongst your world currency operators as a result of having a floating system, a non-pegged system. We had that conflict up until 1944, and it was resolved by gold being tied to the dollar, or vice versa, and every other currency being related to the dollar, and thus related to gold. We've been in a free-floating system since then, and we've outspent any equity that we had. The love bank has been drained, so to say, in the international monetary circles, and the dollar is not as much appreciated as it once was.
But for us Americans, it was a great 40-year ride, wasn't it?
You bet it was.
The post-Bretton Woods system basically said you can have anything you want, and you can borrow more.
My suggestion is if you own ounces at higher prices, 1800, 1900, 1700, that this is a period in time where you want to lower your average cost over the next 2 to 3 weeks. Silver under $30 is compelling. The ratio is 56 to 1. As we suggested months ago, a purchase between 55 and 60 to 1 on the ratio would be likely. We recommended it. We are there. It's time to take action. Don't hesitate. You're 55, 56 to 1. If it marginally improves, you're looking at a silver price still between 27 and 30. This is a time to be accumulating. These will be the lows for the year.
Yeah, so David, really, this is not just about owning gold, and it's not necessarily about the end of the world, okay? If the end of the world doesn't come and we do see a reestablishment of a system, this is really about going back in for the Buffett bargain. In other words, let him lose his buying power while the gold goes up. Let them call it uncivilized. We'll be happy to pick up their shares for pennies on the dollar.
And again, I just hope that he doesn't redefine uncivilized and feel that our buying operating companies is somehow offensive, because we will hold him to the task. Civilized people buy operating companies. Says Charlie Munger, and someday we will at the right discount.
So, David, for people who have questions that they've been meaning to ask you, they listen to the program, but they wish they could have a two-way conversation, I want to remind them about the conference call that they can talk to you tonight at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. All they have to do is give us a call here at 800-525-9556, and we'll give them the information. So if you're listening to this program and you want to talk to David, just give us a call at 800-525-9556. And if you miss, let's say you're listening to the program a few days after recording it and you've missed the conference call, please make sure that you go to YouTube.com/McIlvaney Financial to look at the new 22-minute video segment that you just came out with.
That's exactly right. What we've tried to do is take that DVD and put it in a format where you can look at the most pressing issues in real time, but we have to be able to get that to you in real time. And again, as you look at it, and as you deem it worthy to pass on to friends and family members and colleagues, make sure and send it, forward it to them so that they have the opportunity to act while they still can.
Well, you've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. You can find us at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. Or give us a call at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.